How are you? Toward the bottom and just call you up then.
Okay.
Does everybody have that? The other one was she at? Oh, okay. Case. Gentlemen. In session and ready to begin a I'm sorry, a public hearing on House Bill 3215. Elizabeth, let's take us back to orientation and tell us all about urban renewal.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, what I'll start with is a handout that begins with saying urban renewal basics. And so I just want to kind of refresh everyone's memory because it's been about 3 months since we had any type of urban renewal orientation. So to just kind of go through it, with urban renewal agencies, they're activated by cities or counties to carry out rehabilitation projects within a designated urban renewal plan area. And then once that plan area is formed, the assessed value within that urban renewal plan area is frozen. Then future increases in that assessed value above the frozen value then is that increment or excess value. Urban renewal agencies use bonds to pay for rehabilitation projects, and property tax revenues are then used to make payments on their indebtedness. What you have under current law is you have existing plans and you have new plans. And existing plans are urban renewal plans which have been in existence prior to December 6, 1996, before Measure 50. There's currently 51 of those plans. Each of those plans has two revenue sources, a division of tax, and a special levy tax authority.
Okay. Say that again, because I'll tell you, this was the piece of terminology that drives me crazy. We have existing plans But don't necessarily, that doesn't mean plans are in existence. Those, it means that's a specific statutory definition that encompasses plans that were in existence prior to July 1...
December 6th.
I'm sorry, December 1996.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay.
So those are the only plans that have two revenue sources.
Right.
Division of tax and special levy tax authority. And what we're dealing with in House Bill 3215 is just the division of tax authority. But these two interplay with existing plans. So also with these existing plans, they have a maximum tax authority. This was authority that was grandfathered in from the Measure 5 system with Measure 50. And then you also, these plans have a maximum indebtedness, which was established, had to be established by July 1st, 1998. What we've seen since Measure 50 is that two of those plans, the Dalles and Lake Oswego, were existing plans. They were in existence prior to December 6, 1996, but they did not have maximum indebtedness established because this that was referred to voters, and voters defeated that measure. So you, so what we have are some now new plans that, you know, don't meet this criteria under law of existing plans.
Okay.
Okay.
So existing plans prior to December 6, 1996, two revenue sources, division of tax, and the special levy authority.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Now with new plans, those are urban renewal plans that are enacted after that December 6, 1996 deadline, or those who were enacted prior, but then they failed to add this maximum indebtedness. And there's only two of those cases. And with these new urban renewal plans, they just have one revenue source, that is the division of tax. And in tax year 2001, there's, I've got here nine, but I think there's really just eight new urban renewal plans that have received property tax revenue from the division of tax. And just realize I'm talking about the ones that actually had in 2001 a division of tax revenue source. There are others that were adopted, but they just weren't adopted, and all the information given to the county assessor in time to be on the 2001 roll. So there are also an additional three urban renewal plans which have adopted in 2001 and will be in effect in 2001-02. And there could be others, but at this point we just know that there is at least three. There is three urban renewal plans that will come on new in 2001-02. Okay, now with the division of tax calculation, each taxing district within an urban renewal area has their taxes divided. And under current law, what we have is each district's permanent local option, gap, and bond tax rates are multiplied by the total assessed value, and then a portion of that tax amount, total tax amount, is given to urban renewal agencies. And the urban renewal portion of that total taxes for each district is that portion that is in the incremental value, is that percent of the incremental value over the total assessed value. And this is a calculation that is performed at a code area. It's not performed on each and every account. Okay? Not every property tax account is distinguished as having excess value or this incremental value for urban renewal. Mm-hmm. It's just a calculation that is performed at the code level. And with urban renewal agencies, there are sharing in the compression losses with local taxing districts. And then with this division of tax, it's categorized by the Measure 5 tax limit according to the taxing district that imposed the tax. So for school districts, their permanent gap and local option tax rate, when they're multiplied by the excess value, this is an amount of tax that has been categorized up by a $5 per $1,000 real market value, the Measure 5 tax limit for schools. But if you have a division of tax from the government districts, permanent gap or local option tax rates, that tax amount is going to be categorized under a $10 per $1,000 real market value for the Measure 5 government tax limit. So just recognize you have, right now with the division of tax, you have two different limits that they are subject to according to what taxing districts impose the tax. Now on the next page here, for those of you who don't know, I'm going through the urban renewal basics packet. And on the second page of that, what I've given you is just a real simple example here, trying to just refresh people's memory on what urban renewal division of tax example would be like. And so you basically have, if you have a total assessed value of $5 million and you have an urban renewal excess value of $500,000, you basically have 10% of that code area's value is urban renewal excess value. So basically, 10% of all the taxes in that code area are going to be divided and given to urban renewal agencies. So the type of taxes you could have would be like a school permanent rate of like $5, a local option of 80 cents, a general obligation bond of like 60 cents for a total school rate of $6.40. You multiply that times your total assessed value of $5 million, you come up with $32,000 total for all districts within this code area. And then you would divide out 10% of that, or $3,200, for Urban Renewal Division of Tax. Okay, so that's the way it's done currently for schools, and then you would do the same for all the government taxes. And that the government taxes, if there's a total tax rate of $9, permanent local option gap bonds, general obligation bonds, for a total tax of $9, and you multiply that $9 times the $5 million in assessed value, that would be $45,000 for all the taxing districts. And then you would divide off 10% of that again, or $4,500 for their renewal division of tax. So,
Elizabeth, let me just stop here, I think, and focus on what we were, I think what instigated this bill in the original overview that we had on urban renewal and this discussion that's gone forward from there. I'm looking at the chart, the schedule here on that shows local option, for instance, on the school side, 80 cents per thousand, the GO bond, 60 cents per thousand. Mm-hmm. And then under government, we also have a local option gap and GO bond. Mm-hmm. And those are the bonds or the local options that would have been passed by the voters to fund a specific program or a specific capital project, whatever the case might be. And it is from those local options and bond levies that the Urban Renewal District is taking its division of tax, even though, and I would venture to say that most people who voted for the local option, most people who voted for the bond, were not aware that a portion of that was going to be carved out to fund the urban renewal district. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct, and it's not a requirement or anything like that on any of these taxing districts. You know, what they have to submit to voters, it's not a requirement that they have to submit anything saying a portion of it of their taxes will be divided for urban renewal.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Representative Hess.
This might help clear things up in my mind if you could explain what would happen then if we did nothing and didn't change. What would happen about this legislation? How does this continue to play out? How does the problem?
Well, Representative Hess, you would have just this. I mean, like the example shows, you would have a division of tax then for each new local option or GO bond that is voted on by voters, they would have a division of tax on that new tax rate that's added on top of the permanent rate. And
so current law will continue without anything. And that gets back to, I had dinner up in Portland with some folks, and one of whom was a school activist in the Portland area and very much involved in the local option election. Was it 2 years ago? When was it? 2 years ago for the schools?
Last year.
Mm-hmm. And we got into conversation, just casual conversation, about this bill coming up, and she was unaware that when they were campaigning for the local option in the Portland School District, that not all of that local option was going to be going to fund the school district. And so I think that's the the hidden nature of the funding. I say hidden, and not that it's not in the books for anyone to find. I think it's just not very well known.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't mean to infer anything nefarious there. It's not. Okay.
Okay. And just to kind of go on with this example, basically the total amount that would be divided for the division of tax under current law is basically $7,700. Now, if you look at the original bill, House Bill 3215, you would just divide the permanent rate. Okay, that would be the only thing that would be the basis for the division of tax. And then the total amount of the division of tax would be $5,500. And if you look at the -1, I have the -1 here, but the -3 is the same way as the -1. either the dash one or dash three amendment would result in a division of tax amount of $5,750. That's looking at just the permanent rate plus the gap bond as being the total amount that would be included in the division of tax. Okay, so I'm going to go on to the special levy because one component of this, you're going to be affecting 51 plans, urban renewal plans, and those are the plans with special levy authority. So now the way special levy and division of tax interplay is that the urban renewal special levy can be used to supplement the division of tax revenue up to the maximum tax authority. The urban renewal special levy is paid, though, over all taxpayers in a city or county which is sponsoring the urban renewal plan. So in this particular example, I just extended it further and just said if you had a total assessed value for the city of $10 million and your urban renewal plan maximum authority was $9,000, what you would see under current law is that you would see then this $9,000 minus your $7,700, which is your division of tax total amount, for a remainder of $1,300 that you could collect as an urban renewal special levy. And then that amount, what you do is you determine that special levy amount and divide it by your total assessed value for the city because it's spread out over all taxpayers in the city, and that would come up to a tax rate of only 13 cents per $1,000 of assessed value. That's current law. Now, if you with House Bill 3215, what you're seeing is a smaller division of tax amount. So you're going to be, your division of tax is reduced from $7,700 to like $5,750. So then what you have is you have $5,750 minus from your $9,000, which is your total maximum tax authority, to give you a total special levy amount of $3,250. So then your special levy tax rate is increased from 13 cents to 33 cents. So basically what you're doing is you're shifting more burden on the taxpayers in the city to have a higher special levy from this lowering of the division of tax and then allowing them to increase their special levy authority.
Okay,
so that's basics as far as what how we would see the interaction with existing plans and with new plans. What you're going to be seeing, like in this example, is that a new plan would just have a reduction in their division of tax amount. It would go from $7,700 to $5,750. That would just be a loss in revenue because they do not have special levy authority. They just have division of tax authority.
Okay,
so now what I gave you is a breakdown by county. This is urban renewal taxes by type of taxing district estimates for 2001. So I went through some of the 2000 data, and please realize these are preliminary numbers. I will still be checking them to get at some more accurate estimates, but this is a ballpark figure. But I split it out between cities, counties, community colleges, ESDs, K-12, and special districts. And if you just want to look on the last page, it gives you your summary for your statewide totals. And basically, with your totals, what you're seeing is that, you know, in 2001, the total division of tax for the existing plans, the plans that would be subject to this measure as best as I can identify at this point. And those urban renewal division of tax, division of tax total would be $89 million. And then what we would be seeing is that we would be moving from a total of $89 million to just having the permanent rate and the gap bonds under the House Bill, under the dash one and the dash three amendments. That would reduce your total division of tax amount and just include your $69.8 million of permanent rate plus your $3.7 million in gap amount. And so the total amount of your local option plus bonds that would be removed would be the $15.76 million in tax amount. Now, what we see is that for local options, the local option total amount is $2.25 million, and 50% of that is K-12. School districts. There's over $1 million in local option revenue that would go to the local school district from a change that's being proposed here in this measure. and then with bonds, but the majority of it is general obligation bonds. You got 13.5 million in general obligation bonds that could be reduced from.
Well, that's using today's numbers, but this bill is prospective in its application, though, so it doesn't, it wouldn't change anything with regard to current fundraising.
Mr. Chairman, this is just giving you an idea of how much, you know, there would be in a given year. This is roughly about 18%. This, the local options and bonds are about 18% of the total division of tax. So, you know, and again, this is not static numbers. Local options have been increasing significantly in recent years. Same thing with general obligation bonds. So as those two components increase, then obviously the share of those components of the total division of tax grows. So right now, it's in 2001, it's roughly 18% of the total division of tax. Now, I'll just draw your attention to the revenue impact. I just did a statement on the -3 amendment, and with the -3, this is very similar to the -3 encompasses the -1. So the -3 tries to take a stab at narrowing this window of urban renewal plans and classifying urban renewal plans. So it's really specifying then the three different types of urban renewal plans which will be subject to the changes in the calculation. And the first type that will be subject are new urban renewal plans that are adopted after the effective date of this measure. So as we were talking about, it is prospective. And those new urban renewal plans will be subject to this change in calculation. The existing urban renewal plans that have that special levy authority, they were adopted prior to December 6, 1996, and they have that maximum indebtedness. And urban renewal plans that are adopted after December 6, 1996, and prior to the effective date of this measure, but those are the plan. But those plans cannot have any outstanding indebtedness. And so that's the key there. There are other urban renewal plans out there that have been adopted, but at this point they may not have indebtedness incurred. And so this would be something that is a part of the uncertainty with this revenue impact. So with you basically have about 51 existing urban renewal plans that will result in the transfer of $16 million in tax authority from a division of tax to the tax revenue from a special levy annually for urban renewal plans that are subject to this measure. But the new urban renewal plans that are adopted after the effective date of the measure will have a reduction in local revenues from this measure, and the amount of reduction in their division of tax is dependent on the number of local options and exempt bonds that taxing districts within that urban renewal plan area have actually had voter approval for.
And Elizabeth, when you say new urban renewal plans, how do you mean new urban renewal plans?
Yeah, I mean those adopted after the effective date of this measure.
Okay.
So from the 2001 estimates, as I was saying, that basically about 18% of the total urban renewal division of tax is local option and exempt bonds, but that's going to vary depending on voter approval of these levies. And local taxing districts which have voter-approved levies would have an increase then in their local revenues of more than $2.3 million. School districts have about $1.1 million of that amount. And eliminating the general obligation bonds from the division of tax calculation will reduce bond tax rates to some taxpayers, but other taxpayers then that are within a city or county that are sponsoring an existing urban renewal plan will have an increase in their urban renewal special levy tax rate. So you're really just kind of shifting who is paying for some of these taxes. And again, this measure appears to exclude 8 urban renewal plans from this change in the urban renewal division of tax calculation. This can result in county assessors having to perform additional division of tax calculations for these few plans which have outstanding bond indebtedness but no special levy authority.
Your last statement there tells me why we have Bob Roman and Ray Erland here from the county assessors. You know, you try and scope out why everyone's on this list. I was wondering about those two, but now I know. Okay, I'm going to take this out of order, and I think
before we get in, I can't.
You hear it two or three more times, it'll start to make sense.
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably you said the 8 urban renewal plans that would not
Because they were prior to this 1996 business, or?
Representative Beck, yeah, it's the window between, since December 6, 1996, and before the effective date of this measure, they would have been adopted, and they incurred bonded indebtedness.
Where are those urban renewal areas? Do we know?
I do have that list. You want a copy? Because Joan...
Well, I'm just, are they all in Portland, or?
No. Two in Portland.
Two in Portland.
Well, now, but don't the dash threes bring those in after the current bonds for those districts are paid off?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct, and that is one component of the dash three, is that after their indebtedness has gone away, then they would be subject to this measure.
Even those eight?
Even those eight.
Yeah.
But when do they pay off the debt?
Yeah.
I mean, the local options expire in 4 years, so if we're trying to address an immediate problem with local options, this doesn't seem to be getting there. I'm trying to figure out what...
Not immediate. This is going to be forward-looking in terms of any change.
And Representative Beck, with this handout here that Joan just gave you, these ones that are shaded are the ones that are the would be exempt to begin with from this division of tax change.
You took mine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
These are all exempt because they're...
Representative Beck,
English here.
Yeah, they were approved after December 6, 1996, they've already been approved. They've already been on the tax roll in 2001.
This is the whole list or just the gray?
Just the gray are the new ones.
Gotcha.
And I think you'll hear from Jeff Tashman that with respect to those in particular that they have incurred debt based on an anticipated revenue stream, and so they have obligations to pay off through this anticipation of the tax division of these bonds, and that it causes maybe even constitutional problems to eliminate that funding source. We'll hear about that. Okay? But in the very least, they have incurred debt and plans for expenditures based on the anticipation that the revenue stream would continue off of these existing bonds.
And Representative Beck, I was talking about two plans that also had their maximum indebtedness referred to voters and it was defeated. Well, that's also ones that would be excluded, and that's the City of Lake Oswego and City of the Dow.
Okay,
that's the requirement of the special levy authority.
Let's get some testimony here. Let me do this. Bring up John Phillips. Do you have anything helpful here? Why don't you come on up? when I asked him that, he sat back. Let's get the department. You've signed up neutral. Oh, well, take that as just enlightening.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips of the Department of Revenue. There were some issues last session that came up, and issues that come up every session regarding urban renewal, and we were asked to facilitate an interim work group on this. We met several times and provided a report to the interim committee on this issue. We reported our findings, and the result was some good positive things, but some issues were not resolved, and that's probably why we have a bill here today. There are a number of ways to approach this particular bill. One would be on the policy merits, the philosophical viewpoints on this, and you'll hear more about that, I'm sure, later in the later testimony. But what I'd like to do is address some of the administrative issues with the bill and then make the department available to answer questions that supplement the orientation you have if there are any areas of confusion.
Okay. Just in case.
Just in case. So I'll address some of the points that we have. We aren't supportive or in opposition to this bill, as you mentioned, but there are some things, if we were able to administer it, would help us. First, the effective date. The effective date that was mentioned was the 91st day. And this might be, and you'll probably hear testimony about the complexity of actually reprogramming to accommodate this bill. And so we would suggest that the effective date for the roll calculation that's done on the tax statements for actually implementing this be extended maybe to the following year, which would be the 2002-2003 tax year. But you could split that issue and make this applicable to urban renewal plans effective on or after the 91st day or the effective date of this act. That way, everybody has notice, and new plans coming on or new levies, local option, or bonds that are passed would apply under this bill, but yet the calculation could be extended an extra year.
Okay.
That's first suggestion. Secondly, there's some definitional issues, and I just point out some debt incurred, otherwise discharged, incurred, or outstanding. These are terms that don't have a clear definition in the bill, and we might suggest that the bonded be associated with the word debt, because there are other kinds of debt out there. I think there's probably debt that urban renewal agencies or plans incur for having employees.
John, are you testifying as to the bill or as to one of the sets of amendments or the other?
Actually, the dash 3, I think.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. So if the word bonded were added to the word debt, then it might be more clear if that's what you mean. We're not sure if you're referring to bonded indebtedness. And perhaps the urban renewal agency itself would be able to certify to the assessor of that information so that they're aware of this, because the assessor's office is not going to be aware of whether there's any debt outstanding. And often there's a number of bonded indebtedness issues that are all certified as one amount. So, and actually the amount itself isn't even certified. So the increment is certified and the amount that's needed is certified, but there isn't a way to communicate that information currently. So we could change the form, but we would ask that someone, maybe the agency, be in the best position to determine which debt that is and whether it's paid off or whether it's discharged. Applicability, I would agree with everything that Elizabeth said, but I would add, though, that there are a number of types of plans that she mentioned. She mentioned existing plans, which is a defined term in the statute. There are new plans, which were plans after December 6, 1996, and then there are plans after the effective date of this act. I think there's another type of plan, and that's the plans that are, get this, non-existing plans. So plans that were existing, plans that aren't new, but that were existing, but then lose their existing status under the definition. Because existing is defined as, and then it says what that is. At such a point in time as where they no longer qualify as an existing, they don't become a new plan. They become what we are calling a non-existing plan. So that's not to say they don't exist.
There's more smoke in this bill than there was in the last one.
These are some of the most straightforward issues of urban renewal. So.
I want to know who's responsible for this. Okay.
So anyway, if... And we think there are a couple, at least one agency that has a plan that falls into that area, so and possibly two.
It's a non-existing plan.
A non-existing existing plan.
Yeah. But financially, or the way they get their money, I think is exactly the same as new plans, but since we have them and they're not mentioned in the bill, it's not clear how we treat them. So.
Okay.
We can help with that. But.
They're not in the bill, do they exist?
Yeah.
The plan falls in the woods. And finally, this formula calculation has issues around the fact that I think probably the assessors will talk more about this. But there will be local options passed, and there'll be bond issues passed, and then. Those will be certified on a certification form for the district, and the districts make no distinction on the bonds or local options that are passed in a given time. They might certify a dollar amount for the assessor to extend on the tax roll for bonds, but there's no way the assessor would know whether that's one bond issue or two bond issues or three bond issues, or what the date of each individual bond issue was. So they wouldn't know whether the subsection, I believe it's 3, applies and whether those should be treated as part of the consolidated rate or not part of the consolidated rate. So I think that can be achieved. It's just something that we read in the dash 3 that we're concerned about.
Okay.
Any questions that I might be able to help you with?
There you go. Representative Bates.
I read this carefully last night and again today, and I've gone through it all now, And I want to tell you that you missed April Fool's Day. You're pulling my leg, right?
Sorry.
Yeah, he is kidding. It's not this simple.
Okay. I'm going to schedule a work session with Elizabeth, and she's going to bring me, she's going to get through my thick skull what these people are talking about. Thank you.
Okay. It's public hearing only. We won't be going to a vote today.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. John, thank you. I appreciate you, your offer to make yourself available for assistance here. We'll take you up on that. All right. While we're on to technical issues, I guess, before we get to some of the others, let's bring up Ray Erland and Bob Roman. You guys are going to offer to be of assistance too, right?
That's correct.
Okay, good.
Chairman Shetterly, members of the committee, my name is Bob Roman. I'm the Assessment and Tax Manager at Clackamas County. And here with me today is Ray Erland, who is the Assessor and Tax Collector at Clackamas County. And we're here today also to hopefully be of help in answering technical types of questions and discuss administrative issues, because that's our primary concern with this measure. Now that we've sort of gone through a discussion on urban renewal and how it works, I wanted to just briefly go over some of those things again, and I may be going over a couple of things again, but it will be briefly. As
I think that's okay.
As we see,
it's really okay.
How this measure works. 3215 changes the handling of the division of tax for bonded debt, gap bonds, and local options. And it's done by how an urban renewal agency is categorized. And we've talked about that in a number, there's terminology issue, but hopefully, somewhat simply, existing plans are treated in one way, and those are plans that were formed prior to December 6, 1996. With those existing plans,
We have the existing plans formed prior to December 1996, and we have plans that have been formed since then that are not existing plans, but they're not non-existing plans.
They do exist.
And for us that work with them and have to work with them, we just try to refer to them as plans that were formed after December 6th and have been categorized as new plans,
uh-huh.
They're formed after December 6th and prior to the effective date of this measure. Those would be plans that would be treated in the same fashion, really, that they're being treated now. We would divide the tax on the local options, the bonded debt, and the gap bond. The existing plans, those prior, we would no longer divide the tax on the bonded debt, local options, or gap bonds. But what would happen would be this would cause a corresponding increase in the special levy for those plans. So that's the trade-off that you've been, or the shift that you've been hearing about. Now also, with these existing plans, there are districts out there that we've talked about that have voter-approved local option type measures. For those that are rate-based, those taxing districts would receive additional revenue as a result of this measure, because we're no longer dividing the tax from that local option. And so correspondingly, taxpayers in those areas would be paying some increased taxes, because this is going to be turned around and then they'd see an increase in the special levy amount.
So in those plans, you're saying the effect of this is to eliminate the tax division funding mechanism, that those are the plans that have levy authority, and that levy authority then is spread on across a geographical area that is broader than the urban renewal district, and that is why you're saying that
It's broader than the plan area boundary itself. But it is consistent with the boundaries of the agency which formed.
Of the city or the county, whatever the case may be. Okay.
And then there is that third category, and those that were, would be plans that would be formed after the existence or the, after this measure, the effective date of this measure. And they're basically a prospective issue. The taxes aren't divided on those local options, gap bonds, there wouldn't be any gap bonds, but bonded debt. And that is really the impact of those types of plan areas or agencies.
Before you go on, though, looking at your second main paragraph, that is the second set of capital letters, their plans formed or substantially amended between December 12, 1996 and the effective date of this measure, then your first bullet says the division of tax and bonded debt, local options, and gap bonds would occur in the past, but under the Dash 3 amendments. Have you seen the Dash 3 amendments?
Unfortunately, we hadn't seen those yet, so...
This is prospectively after the current bonds are paid off, then they would become subject to the same limitation, but...
And thank you. I do understand that.
Okay.
From the standpoint of the assessor's office, which is responsible for actually doing the calculations and extending taxes to the property owners in our counties, what this measure would result in is that we would have to treat, in some cases, the way we handle division of tax for the same taxing district differently, because it may be located in an existing plan area as well as a new plan area, or it might fall within that category of being formed after December 6th, but prior to the effective date of this measure. Give you an example. In Clackamas County, the Metropolitan Service District is a large district. It has property within the boundaries of numerous urban renewal plan areas. We have some plan areas that would be categorized as existing, and we also have some plan areas that would be categorized as those that were formed after December 6th, but prior to the effective date. So for that taxing district, we would be dividing the taxes in the plan areas, or not dividing the taxes in the plan areas that were existing on their bonded debt, but we would be dividing it in the areas where these plan areas were formed afterwards.
So you've got an overlap.
We have an overlap, and it's that type of consistency that we have some concern on, because we don't know exactly how we will handle those administratively. And that gets down really to our last major paragraph on the information that we've provided, and that it's going to require some programming for systems that already handle a fairly complicated urban renewal calculation. The cost of how to determine how we will accomplish those changes and then reprogram, we can't really tell right now, because we don't know exactly what we're going to have to do, and we think that there certainly would be merit if there were some discussions on how that might be accomplished and maybe some of those types of issues cleared up. Some of the other items that we became aware of as we looked at how this measure might be administered, there was some concern about the degree of difficulty in programming, but the potential for error is increased whenever you make this urban renewal calculation more complicated, because it may require us to try to calculate or know some things for which we don't know at this point as to how we're going to, what methodology we're going to use. It also could complicate the sharing of taxing district information, which goes on between counties before the tax calculation process. Statutorily, by September 25th of each year, we share joint district information, because some of these same districts that we're talking about will not only have multiple levies, will not only be located in multiple plan areas within our county, but they're going to be located in multiple counties. Metropolitan Service District would be another good example. So there would be some issues that we would want to see hopefully worked out to make sure that we can share all of the information necessary to correctly calculate taxes in a timely manner, because this all occurs from September 25th, when we share information, until October 25th, when we have to have a tax bill out. And then finally, I thought it was important to maybe raise the issue, although we don't have any option three type of urban renewal plan areas.
And that's option three means, is that non-existing?
No.
Oh.
Chairman Chatterley, back when with the advent of Measure 50, urban renewal areas had to opt for how they were going to collect some of their revenue.
All right, okay.
And an option three plan area is one that could that would have opted or could have opted to take a reduced division of tax, which they are obligated to continue through the life, and then they can also opt for the amount of a special levy.
Right.
And you know, we would speculate that it would have maybe some degree of complication with those types of plan areas. The reason we raise this issue is because we share joint district information with Multnomah County, which has some option three plan areas, and I know that they always have a considerable amount of time that needs to be spent in making those calculations to ensure that they're accurate. And we're happy to ask or answer any questions that you might have now that that's been perfectly cleared up in everyone's mind.
The scary thing is I remember those options, those three options from the Measure 50 and Senate Bill 1250 or whatever that was from 97. Well, the one comment, Chairman Shetterly, members of the committee, the one comment I would make is whatever you do on this bill, give the assessors and tax collectors time to implement it, Department of Revenue time to analyze it, and so we can administer it fairly and accurately and don't have it in the 2001-2002 year. Give us an extra year to do it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, I think it's time to hear from the urban renewal guys. Let's invite John Russell and Jeff Tashman. I take it you're together?
You're a pair.
You're a pair.
Mr. Chair, representatives of the committee, John is going to be delivering testimony, but I would like to just talk briefly about the Dash 1 amendment.
I'm sorry, Jeff, you could identify yourself for the record.
My name is Jeffrey Tashman. I represent the Association of Oregon Redevelopment Agencies. The Dash 1 amendments have, I don't know if it was explained totally, the main effect, or really what we intended is the only effect of the Dash 1 amendments, refers to classifying plans as either existing or new, or what we called window plans, which are the ones that are adopted after December 5th and before the effective date of the bill. The bill is introduced, deals with the window plans, and it says that if those plans are exempted, but if they're amended after the effective date of the bill, they would then be subject to the reduction in division of tax. And the Dash 1 amendments removes the reference to the amendment, and so that once a plan was a window plan, it would always be exempt. And we're going to be testifying in favor of that and against the Dash 3 amendments. I just wanted to make clear what the Dash 1 amendments were about.
Okay. Please. Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Russell. I'm the president of AORA, the Association of Oregon Redevelopment Agencies, for about the last week and a half.
So your predecessor got the assignment and quit?
My predecessor moved to Minnesota,
here?
And I...
Come down here. Here.
And I've been holding a grudge for the last week and a half for that, I would add. AORA represents more than 40 urban renewal agencies throughout Oregon and is an affiliate association of the League of Oregon Cities. AORA supports the intent of HB 3215, which is to reduce and eventually eliminate the division between taxing districts and urban renewal agencies of taxes raised for bond and local option levies. Though it will reduce the amount of tax increment funds generated by future urban renewal plans, AORA supports the bill as amended by the Dash 1 amendments because it will have a positive effect on the ability of taxing districts to pass bond and local option levies. Voters will know that all of the taxes raised for these levies will be used for their stated purpose instead of a portion being allocated to urban renewal agencies. The tax rates needed to raise the necessary bond or local option funds will be somewhat lower and potentially more acceptable to voters. In addition, the impact of tax increment financing on property tax rates will ultimately be eliminated. This will occur after the completion of those plans that are exempted from the bill and the termination of special urban renewal levies. AORA's support of this bill is tied to its opposition to other bills that would seek to exempt certain types of taxing districts, such as rural fire protection districts, from the division of taxes. In contrast to HB 3215, these bills do not represent good policy decisions. AORA's support is therefore in the context of HB 3215 being the only change to the division of taxes process. AORA further urges the committee to pass the HB 3215-1 amendments. 3215, as introduced, would exempt those urban renewal plans that were adopted between December 96 and July 02 from the provisions of the bill. And with all of the discussion, as Mr. Tashman said, we have coined the phrase window plans for this. So there's one more term for you to file away. These plans are exempted because otherwise there would be unanticipated losses of revenue from future bond and local option levies that could affect the security for debt issued to finance the plans. However, the bill as introduced states that if such plans were amended after July 1, 02, these plans would lose this exemption. As urban renewal plans are carried out, it is common that amendments are needed to reflect changing conditions and priorities. If plan amendments could not be made except at the cost of revenue losses and potential risk to bondholders, the ability to adapt the plans to changing circumstances would be reduced. The Dash 1 amendments would allow such plans to keep their exemption and to be amended under statutory provisions. The Dash 1 amendments would remove the only objection AORA has to the bill as drafted, and again, we urge their positive consideration by the committee. Now, as Mr. Tashman said, there's one additional testimony, and we'd like to talk a little bit about the Dash 3 amendments as well. So I'll present this testimony. We understand that with these Dash 3 amendments, that they would limit the exemption in HB 3215 as introduced of urban renewal plans adopted between December 5th, 96 and the effective date of the bill. The exemption would also apply to two urban renewal plans adopted prior to that date that do not meet the statutory definition of existing urban renewal plans. We call these plans window plans. For window plans, the amendments would allow the division of taxes from future bond and local option levies only to the extent needed to retire outstanding debt. Urban renewal agencies could not use the revenues from future bond and local option levies for future debt, which is necessary to complete the plan in a timely manner. The bill exempts window plans because they would otherwise sustain an unanticipated loss in revenues from future bond and local option levies. Projections of revenues contained in window plans are commonly based on assumptions that existing bond and local option levies will be renewed and that revenues from such levies will be available to finance the plan. The policy underlying the exemption for window plans is the same policy to compel the 1997 legislature to allow the urban renewal special levy for then existing plans. In the face of revenue losses, which in that case were caused by Measure 50, the mechanism is necessary to allow an urban renewal agency to fully honor the commitment it made when it adopted a plan. Private real estate development decisions are made on the basis of anticipating future urban renewal projects, and if the ability to finance these projects is impaired, these commitments may not be fully or timely kept. In addition, there are problems in defining outstanding debt. Some urban renewal plans incur debt in the form of long-term contracts for administrative services or commitments to make improvements in return for private investment. Such commitments are contained in development agreements. These forms of debt may not be based on specific dollar amounts, and the extent to which such debt is outstanding would be difficult or impossible to measure. Finally, the amendments add another level of complexity to the assessor's duties, as you just heard. If the amendments are adopted, assessors will have to distinguish among different kinds of urban renewal plans, different types of levies, and the issuance and satisfaction dates of different debt instruments. This complication, we feel, is unnecessary to accomplish the intent of HB 3215. In summary, AORA urges the committee to reject the -3 proposed amendments.
Okay. Any questions for these two? We got a few more, maybe can enlighten us further.
Maybe these gentlemen can help explain. I don't tend to understand the stuff that well. Refinancing bonds, is that ever done with urban renewal areas?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, it's commonly done.
And what would precipitate an urban renewal district to wake up one day and decide we need to refinance our debt?
Well, typically, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, typically the reason that debt is refinanced is because current market interest rates are lower than the original one.
Okay.
There's normally I don't know if this is a legal requirement or policy, but typically the term of the refunding bonds doesn't go any further than the term of the original bond.
The end date.
The end date. Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess the intent, when we first started brainstorming this bill, I mean, we were essentially looking at taking some of the revenue stream out, putting it into schools, and requiring then the urban renewal areas to essentially refinance their debt. I would assume we'd be asking to extend the date of the term. It'd probably be the only way to do it with less revenue, right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't believe that the bill would require that urban renewal agencies refinance their debt.
Okay. But you could.
I don't think it would have an effect on whether they refinance their debt or not. I think that would be completely I suppose if this is hard to think through.
I'm not asking the right question, I'm sure, either. But look, it's so complicated. Let me just, rather than bugging you guys, okay, let me talk with this staff, this chair, yeah, later.
For him.
For who?
Him.
Or Jeff. Right. Yeah. That'd be fine.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your help with this, and including the work getting this thing drafted to begin with. Let me try and finish up our witnesses signed up today, though I promise you this will not be a replay of yesterday's. Let's bring up Pat and John Simpson. Or just Pat? Okay, fine. Welcome.
Chair? Thank you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have any of the expertise that all these people had. I got a little bit.
Identify yourself for
Pat Simpson.
Record and for listening
to the
internet.
Private citizen, following urban renewal and hoping for reform. And I really appreciate this bill, which I think is making a good step in that direction, so I'm really positive towards it. And it does have more complications than what I expected. And from listening to the others, I'd suggest that we get a flow chart from these experts as to all these things, because that will show us some other things, but also when you get the final flow chart, then you can give it to all the county assessors for the recoding into their programs. They shouldn't have to rethink it all. So I thought it was a wonderful suggestion that Representative Beck came up with. I haven't had time to think it through either, but I think it might well be considered to refinance the debt, since if they're having less money to pay the debt with, why not extend the years of the debt? I think that really is a great consideration. I hadn't thought of that. Meanwhile, provided one sheet that I wanted to go through to try to get some general feelings from the public out there and that sort of thing. So, of course, you all know the purpose, so I don't have to say that. But I feel that urban renewal desperately needs reform. I forgot to steal the handout. I knew. I told my husband to watch. So it needs reformed. It's getting expensive, even more expensive, and it is unfair. The House Bill 3215 would go a long way to correct, quote, inadvertent consequences of urban renewal. It would also eliminate a lot of taxation without representation and hidden taxes that is to be found in urban renewal. I urge everyone to support the bill and try to work through all the complications. For this session, this is the only urban renewal bill that the League of Oregon Cities actually says that it supports on the Internet. I found that amazing that they would even support any. I grew up in Pittsburgh in the heyday of steel mills, so I was not delighted to find that Coos County, where I now live in relatively clean air, was trying to bribe a steel company to locate here a couple of years ago. To console me, our county commissioner said that this big new company would lower our county bond rate on our property taxes. I told her our bond rate would not be lowered because the proposed steel mill was to be located in an urban renewal area. When she found out that I was right, she was upset and said that it was an inadvertent consequence that urban renewal was not supposed to work that way. If money collected for bonds did not have to be divided with urban renewal, it would not matter whether the new company was located in an urban renewal area or not. A new development would help lower our debt tax rates and our local options. I didn't even think about the gap bonds. I don't know anything about them, but they evidently are in the same category. So right now, urban renewal is taxation without representation because in other cities, urban renewal can adversely affect my property taxes, as seen above, but I cannot vote for their city councilors who decide to create these urban renewal areas. Urban renewal has hidden taxes. It does not show up on my tax bill. You mentioned that earlier, I believe, Mr. Chairman, about the hidden taxes. It does not show up in my tax bill that these bond debts, local option levies, and, of course, the gap, because it does not show up that I'm paying more because they have to be shared with the urban renewal areas. So I think hidden taxes is always to be avoided. I mean, if you're going to pay taxes, you should at least see where it's all going to. So anyhow, both people and taxing districts are becoming aware at last that urban renewal is not the motherhood and apple pie that some agencies and people and cities have been telling us even. And reform is needed. House Bill 3215 will make urban renewal a lot more civilized and fair, and I urge support for it. One of the things that occurred to me is hearing all these complications, maybe we ought to begin to consider saying after whatever year, there's just not going to be any more urban renewal. I think perhaps it's outlived its usefulness, and it's becoming so complicated it's like a house of cards, and it is not fair. Are there any questions?
That's my line.
I'm sorry.
Are there any questions?
Okay, thank you, Pat. Thank you for coming up. 3.5 hours, is that it?
3.5 hours.
3.5 hours.
Right. Yeah. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
You bet. You see him. Let's finish up with Karen Williams and Michelle Deister, representing that organization that supports this alone among all of the urban renewal bills of the session. And Marge. Are you just here for introductions again? You weren't on the list.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't. I would like, I'm Marge Kafoury representing the City of Portland, and I'd like to introduce Karen Williams to you. She is with the law firm of Lane Powell Spears Liberski, and she used to be general counsel for the Portland Development Commission. We have a couple of issues to bring to the committee this afternoon. We apologize for further complicating the discussion of this.
Think nothing of it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to appear before you. Like Mr. Russell, I, for a week and a half now, have had a new job. The Portland Development Commission is the City of Portland's urban renewal agency. And the Portland Development Commission, along with AORA and the League of Oregon Cities, supports House Bill 3215. and the Dash 1 amendments. We concur with the Association of Oregon Redevelopment Agencies' testimony urging rejection of the Dash 3 amendments that would make the exemption in the bill effective as to urban renewal plans adopted between December 5, 1996 and the effective date of the bill, those that Mr. Tashman described as the window plans. The nature of tax increment financing is such that in the early years of an urban renewal plan, there's very limited capacity for borrowings, first because the increment has not grown enough in order to generate enough tax revenues to debt serve, and second because the growth performance of a plan area has not been established for a long enough period of time to demonstrate the plan area's creditworthiness to bond underwriters and bondholders. In order to provide working funds in the early years of a plan, the City of Portland makes general fund-backed borrowings and makes the proceeds of those available to the Portland Development Commission. Portland and the PDC have agreed that PDC will exercise the authority urban renewal agencies have in ORS 457.320 to assume those obligations incurred once the window plans are creditworthy, and Portland and the Portland Development Commission have structured borrowings in Lentz, River District, Interstate, North McAdam urban renewal plan areas, assuming that the Portland Development Commission would be able to use tax increment borrowings in the future to pay off those borrowings. The borrowings were structured and timed on the assumption that there would be adequate available tax increment revenues to pay them off from the proceeds of urban renewal bonds when the borrowings are due. We anticipate that the impact of House Bill 3215 would be approximately a 16% reduction in tax increment revenues. I appreciated Ms. Martin-Harris's comments and those of the assessors that that estimate may in fact be low. If the proposed amendments are made retroactive such that they cover the window plans, they would have a significant and detrimental impact on PDC's ability to honor its commitments relative to those City of Portland general fund-backed borrowings. That's of significant concern to us because as the bill is drafted now, those things are not urban renewal indebtedness per se. They are City of Portland indebtedness that we have a political agreement with the City of Portland that we would exercise this authority to pay them off and free up the general fund. So this proposal does have some pretty significant implications for the City of Portland. For this and for the policy reasons discussed by Yora, we urge the committee to reject the Dash 3 amendment. The City of Portland has another issue that we would like to address, and that is in Section 3 of the Dash 3 amendment. City, and Chair Shetterly, I imagine you will probably have good recollection and high sensitivity for this issue, having had personal involvement with the FPDNR discussions. And the city is concerned that
Portland Fire, Police, Retirement,
Disability
and Retirement.
And Retirement, yes, thank you, excuse me for using the acronym. The
A-okay.
The city has done extensive financial planning on the assumption that if it were to exercise the right that appears in Section 11.5CD of Article 11 of the Oregon Constitution to convert that pay-as-you-go FPDNR payment to a long-term bond, that it would be able to do that with neutral financial impacts. So if this amendment is adopted, the City of Portland respectfully requests that it be held harmless for that planning and that the ability to make that conversion as provided in the Constitution not affect any change in the way taxes would be divided. The effect that Portland is seeking is that taxes for that would continue to be divided because they've done financial planning, and I realize you all are somewhat on overload on tax increment technical here, so with your forgiveness, I won't go too far into what the implications of that are, but they do have some implications for other general fund issues for the City of Portland.
Mr. Chairman, Marge Gafori again. May I just explain a couple of things that you have here? When I engrossed this little amendment, it was written to amend the dash one. However, the handwriting on here was then converting this amendment to amend the dash three. So what our amendment would do, if you'll track with the handwritten part, would be to add a phrase in subsection C of sub 3 of section 3, following the parenthesis there, as you see in the third line of that written subsection 3, or C, excuse me, which would add, other than a tax for local government pension and disability plan obligations, which is approved pursuant to section 11.5CD of Article 11 of the Oregon Constitution. That refers back to the exemption that we had earlier for pension debt, or FPD&R debt that we levy for our plan.
That wouldn't apply to any other jurisdiction other than the City of Portland and its plans.
That's correct.
Okay. Anybody want to say anything about the dash news? The 91st day after Sine Die, as opposed to tax years beginning July 1 of 2002.
I don't really have.
I meant to ask about that. Well, before we just go willy-nilly and adopt them, we'll ask more people about them. But, okay. Because we've all been talking about dash 1 and dash 3, and nobody's really said much about the twos. Okay, Michelle.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities. The League of Oregon Cities does support House Bill 3215 as amended by the Dash 1 amendments because we feel that it responsibly and prospectively addresses the concerns of members of the community who point out that the divide the taxes process on bond and local option levies can result in either slightly higher tax rates in the case of bond levies to cover the amount that is divided for urban renewal, or in the case of a rate-based levy, not resulting in as much revenue being collected as was intended because of the amount that must be divided for urban renewal. As written, 3215 would obviate those concerns for urban renewal plans enacted or substantially amended after the effective date of the Act. However, we feel that it is important to include the Dash 1 amendments because those amendments, as has been explained by other parties, but I'll just reiterate, those amendments exclude plans that are substantially amended after the bill's effective date from these provisions. Those plans that are amended were originally created assuming current circumstances, and I think that's a very important point. The Dash 1 amendments to this bill, a substantial amendment by statute includes changes to a plan that would increase the debt limitation of a plan or increase the total plan area by 1%. The Dash 1 amendments are important because if the plans that undergo substantial amendments were not permitted to receive revenues from the division of bond or local option levies, it could hurt the ability of those plans to keep project commitments and pay off existing debts along the timelines that were originally anticipated. So, again, I'm sure I'm not saying anything new here, but we did want to be on the record of supporting those Dash 1 amendments. And in terms of the Dash 3 amendments, obviously we're generally concerned with any proposal that could undermine the effectiveness of urban renewal. And these amendments, the Dash 3 amendments, have that potential, as Mr. Russell pointed out, because urban renewal agencies could not use the revenues from future bond and local option levies for future debt, which may be necessary, you know, if the project is being phased in, et cetera. So,
let me ask one question of the panel, I guess, that occurs to me. This isn't specific to your testimony, but you can respond as well as anybody. A lot of the testimony we've heard has been the concern about the effect of making this applicable to any. I don't want to say existing plans because that's a term of art, but any, you know, the plans that are out there now, including the non-existent plans, because it would impair their revenue and their ability to perform. Let me just ask this: we pass bills here from time to time, and not infrequently, that it have the effect of reducing property tax at the local government level that has the same effect, doesn't it? Why is this conceptually, we can argue whether that's good or bad, but why is this conceptually different? Now, I do understand we're talking about current bonds where there is debt payment that is obligated, but I'm thinking here now more the prospective application of this to those window plans that are not currently relying on debt, on this increment financing to pay existing debt. We're really talking about reducing their ability to generate revenue into the future without implicating any current obligations. Why is this so much different than what we do all the time, which is reduce tax that local governments can work off of? I don't mean to be facetious, but I mean, we do that, and so this isn't the first time we've heard that argument. Why is this argument different from all other arguments to get us into the season?
Yes. Chairman Shetterly, members of the commission, I don't receive your question as facetious at all. I think it's a very thoughtful question and an appropriate one. For the tape, I'm Karen Williams. I think there are two answers to your question. First, at least in Portland's case, there are financial commitments that have been made for the window plans that were made in anticipation of the current state of division of taxes. That's not true for all of our window plans, but it is true for approximately a $50 million impact in Portland. But the other reason, I think, I'd refer you back to some of Mr. Tashman and Mr. Russell's comments, that urban renewal, by its nature, is a 20 to 30 year undertaking, and that in many circumstances, there are public-private partnerships that are extremely important to the success of a plan, in which parties make financial commitments, significant undertakings, in reliance on, for instance, in Portland's case, a published five-year plan. An example that comes to mind is the Brewery Blocks redevelopment in the Portland area. It's the Blitz Weinhard, the Armory, the area that surrounds Pell's bookstore. That redevelopment is approximately a $150 million project. The Portland Development Commission is participating with approximately $8 million in urban renewal funds in that project. But many of the expectations the project developers have for growth in the area, for market penetration, for absorption and acceptance of the project and therefore its financial success, were based in large part on other projects that PDC will be doing within its River District Urban Renewal Plan area. So when Mr. Russell was talking about things that are not precise indebtedness commitments, but that are project or program commitments, those things are very real and they're quite significant. I think that differs substantially from entitlement programs, administrative expenses, or regulatory activities that have a different nature and a different body of expectations in the public.
Okay. We need to wrap this up. Do you have a question, Representative?
Well, I think it's more, Michelle, in your last sentence, your testimony, could hurt the ability of those urban renewal plans to keep project commitments and pay off existing debt. I assume there are circumstances where factors outside of the legislature occur that somehow an urban renewal district can't pay off its existing debt. Something, I don't know, revenues don't come in at the level anticipated, but they sold the bonds at a certain rate and the revenue isn't there and they can't pay it off under the schedule. Is that right, or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, I think generally speaking, when you're assuming revenues, you estimate them very, very conservatively. I guess the point that I was really trying to make is just that these plans are, you know, the ones that are being, that undergo substantial amendments by definition, they need to have the flexibility to do those amendments over the course of 10 to 20 years. Adding more than 1% of area to the total plan, I mean, it could be 1.5%, which isn't really, you know, perhaps a significant amount of increase. However, under the way the bill is written now, that would still fall off of the ability
to buy the taxes.
You mean the dash threes?
The dash threes?
No, as the plan is written, 3215 with no amendments, if they're enacted or substantially amended.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay, the original bill. With,
right.
Okay, yeah.
So I guess that was the point that I was trying to make, is just that it's important that those plans that are substantially amended, you know, be provided for, and that's why we're submitting the dash one amendment.
The dash ones. Okay. I want to thank you for testifying today. I wouldn't say enlightening us, but confusing us, or at least giving us information that we will distill. Thank you for the written testimony. That'll help to get spend some time with that. Thank you, committee, for your attentiveness. Oh, I will close the public hearing, but please don't leave for just a minute. Public hearing, close that. Let me request unanimous consent that we return to the reopen the work session on House Bill 2477 for the purpose of allowing Representative Bates and Brown to cast their votes. This is the representative closest bill that we move to the floor without recommendation with referral to Ways and Means. Any objection? And we are in work session on House Bill 2477. Representative Bates, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
All right. Close that work session, and the chair requests unanimous consent that we return to reopen the work session on House Bill 3433 for the purpose of allowing Representative Bates to vote. This is the cigarette tax bill. Any objection? Hearing none. Representative Bates, how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you. Close that work session. Committee, we are at again at 1 o'clock sharp tomorrow with a long agenda. Got a bunch of bills to hear and knock out, so appreciate your time with us, and we'll get started at 1 o'clock. Tomorrow, we're adjourned.
I want to talk to you about this.
This?
Point.
Yeah.
Do you understand it? Can you explain it to me in layman's terms?
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
Oh. Well,
we can all settle in.